And I was 14 years old and I was bullied horrifically in high school and believed every single thing that the girls would scream at me to be true and just completely believed that I was an unworthy, disgusting, unlovable human that would never find a place where I belong or a place where my voice would be heard and worth hearing in this world. And so that's truly where I believe that all of who I am, that's where I was created. Because that's been my life mission, to essentially reprogram that belief that I'm not worthy and I'm not good enough and I'm not lovable and I'm not beautiful and no one cares what I have to say, and really cultivate inner courage and inner confidence to become a fully expressed woman. I mean, when you're 14, when I was 14, I had no idea what thoughts, feelings, subconscious beliefs were. So, you know, as these things were being yelled out to me, I didn't realize, but in the back of my mind, I started questioning it. I'm like, maybe I am all of these things. Maybe I am rank. Maybe I am disgusting. And huge feelings of shame and unworthiness. The one thing that I know about shame is the more that we hold it inside, the more that it festers and brews and gets bigger, and we create bigger stories around what this shameful thing means about us. And then after a period of time, we'll start believing it. The greatest thing that we can do is speak it, give it a voice so that it's no longer hidden, share it with someone who you feel safe with. And then from there, if you need support, I mean, support for me has been the greatest part of my healing journey, finding mentors who have broken through whatever it is that I'm experiencing and can pave the way for me to and through my breakthrough.
Personal freedom, bio-individual health, mindset, lifestyle, movement, relationships, happiness. Join me on the journey of optimizing your reality into a happy, healthy, and more fulfilling life. My name is Gary Tirola, and this is Optimize Your Life. What's going on, beautiful people? I am back with another epic episode with another epic human being that not only will help you optimize your life, but will really allow you to see what I've learned from her. How to speak the fucking truth. So, welcome back, Beck Antonucci. I am so pumped for you to be in the room and on the party. Really, I'm so thankful.
Oh, I'm really excited to connect with you like this, Gary. Really excited.
I know. I love going deep, and I don't know many people in the world that are not afraid at all to go as deep as you go. And we're going to go deep into that later. But for now, I know on your Instagram, you say you're obsessed with vulnerability, personal development, positive psychology, body acceptance, and radical self-expressions. And I've seen your work. We've worked together as coaches. Who are you? What are you? What do you do? What's your mission?
Who am I? So my name is Becca Antonucci. I just feel like I'm a human that is here to express her deepest truth and unlock that permission within others to own whatever part of them they thought was unworthy in society's eyes that kept them suppressed, silenced, and playing small, and really support them to realize that the permission that they're searching for exists all along inside of the self. And as soon as we free ourselves from that mental prison that was self-created in the first place, that we can experience so much joy and pleasure and abundance and beauty. So that's really my work. That's been my life's work with myself. To further evolve and expand and become even more of myself and experience more of myself, and then to be able to give that gift to others so that they can create that kind of impact first and foremost for themselves, and then the ripple effect is that they then create that for others too.
You and I got very similar missions. I was actually prepping for a workshop yesterday in where I walked people through like identifying what their mission is, because I think it's so important. If you don't know what your mission is, you can't put clarity to your actions and your thoughts and your words. And you are so like to the point on what you want to do and what you want to accomplish with your clients, with the world out there. You didn't just arrive here. First of all, I don't believe there's overnight success ever. But what was your kind of journey to get to this point in time?
I mean, I think the seed of this was planted when I was 14 years old and I was bullied horrifically in high school. I went to a prestige all-girls school and I was bullied so horrifically for 5 years, pretty much day in, day out, and believed every single thing that the girls would scream at me to be true and just completely believed that I was an unworthy, disgusting, unlovable human that would never find a place where I belong or a place where my voice would be heard and worth hearing in this world. And so that's truly where I believe that all of who I am, that's where I was created, because that's been my life mission, to essentially reprogram that belief that I'm not worthy and I'm not good enough and I'm not lovable and I'm not beautiful and no one cares what I have to say, and really cultivate inner courage and inner confidence to become a fully expressed woman. So that's where it began. And then from there, it started.
I'm going to pause you there quick. Like, what kind of things were they calling you? Like, so the audience can kind of relate, you know?
So I was being screamed at every single day that I'm just two particular words: you're disgusting and you're rank. And there was a multitude of other things, but they're the two words in particular that have always stuck with me. I was very studious. I wouldn't accept awards at assembly. I would always receive awards. I would never get up and get an award because I feared for my physical safety and my emotional safety, that if I was to get up on stage in front of all the girls, that my year group would scream at me if my name came out. I was on every sport team to avoid sitting alone at recess and lunch.
Were you just singled out of the crowd for no rhyme or reason? I know these things happen in high school and primary school all the time, and I've had my stint of bullying as well, or being bullied in primary school. Mm-hmm. Some people get picked out for their looks. Some people get picked out just because, for whatever reason.
So the girl who in particular bullied me had actually been my best friend, and she decided one day that she wanted to join the popular group, and in a very wealthy all-girls school, popularity is kind of like the pinnacle of success, and so she needed to leave me behind to become that. And the way that because we made amends years later, and she said, by being so awful to me, every time I would confront her to say, hey, let's have a conversation, the more she screamed at me and treated me like I wasn't human, the more that I would feel afraid to go up to her, and the more she didn't feel like she had to confront not being my friend anymore and really having a vulnerable conversation. That's what she shared with me. I think we were 21 years old when we had a clearing. And because I said to her, couldn't you have just not been my friend and just left me alone? That's all I wanted, was to not be yelled at every day. But she felt the more inhumane she spoke to me, the more she didn't have to face off with whatever she was feeling internally around the rejection that she offered me.
Such an important point you bring up. When people are teasing and bullying and all that, it really is a reflection, and you can tell me if I'm on or not, is the reflection of their own vulnerability. But when we're kids, we actually don't see that. So when you were receiving this and you were on the horrible end of the bullying, what kind of emotions were you experiencing, and then what confusions were you experiencing?
Oh, so much. I mean, when you're 14, when I was 14, I had no idea what thoughts, feelings, subconscious beliefs were. So you know, as these things were being yelled out to me, I didn't realize, but in the back of my mind, I started questioning it. I'm like, maybe I am all of these things. Maybe I am rank. Maybe I am disgusting. And huge feelings of shame and unworthiness. And I mean, we're programmed by movies and television. I think Dawson's Creek was my favorite TV show back then. So you see what high school's meant to look like. And it wasn't that experience for me, and questioning, like, why am I the person that doesn't get to have that beautiful experience where I have friends to hang out with and people to invite to my birthday party and people to care about me? And just a lot of shame and a lot of, I must be bad if I can't fit in here. I think there was 160 girls in our year group. If I can't fit in here, how in the world will I survive outside of this space? It's just going to be more and more people to hate me for who I am, because it wasn't anything that I did. It wasn't anything I said. And when even though I created this perception of me being this horrifically horrendous looking girl, when I look back at photos, I was just a lovely teenager. So I just created a story because of who I am. That's not good enough. And that's worthy of so much berating and shame and judgment. How will I ever fit in anywhere in the world?
And did that land up, I'm guessing, inevitably changing your actions and your decisions you're making in your life at that stage?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, as soon as I left high school, I didn't realize, because obviously there was the emotional pain received from the bullying that then resulted in physical pain. I didn't realize validation to me at the time meant safety. I really was just a young girl who felt so incredibly unsafe in the world, that women are going to emotionally harm me, and they're going to emotionally harm me so badly that I'm going to think that ending my life is an easy way out of this pain that I'm in. So my safety physically and emotionally had been taken from me. And when I left high school, I went to find safety in the opposite sex. So I went and got a boyfriend. So not from a conscious choice of like, I want a boyfriend, but from a place of, I'm scared of women, and now I'm going to try and play it safe, one man, and I'll stay safe with him. Okay. And then that created the next whirlwind of events for me.
That's so interesting. What was your home life like? Were you getting the supports and nurturing there?
Yeah, I mean, I come from a very cutesy family upbringing, like a very cute mom, a very cute dad, lots of love. I mean, like a very funny family dynamic in terms of dad's way is the way. He's Italian, mom's Irish. But in terms of how I was treated with so much love. My little sister was my best friend. So my child, when everyone's like, how's your inner child? I'm like, my inner child just skipping around so happy. She's like, she's glorious. She's loved. She's playing games. Her sister's her best friend. But my inner teenager, she's wounded. Mm. She's the one that's like, the world is scary.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. I've seen so many of your stories with your family and I'm always laughing because it's like, it seems like everyone's just taking the piss of each other, but in like a very cool Italian way. I come from an Italian family as well. So it's really cool. And I think what you showed there with your family, there is two sides to a sense of love when it comes to teasing. There's a very fine line, I'm guessing, between like teasing through this art of love between your dad mm-hmm. and your mom and all that versus teasing to get one up on the other person like at school that you experienced.
Yeah, yeah. When my family and I are playing, we're genuinely in the innocence of play. But when there's playing and there's berating, like teasing and there's berating in the teasing, that's where I find the difference is. Mm. Our teasing is playful.
Yeah,
that's and a real innocent. My parents have beautiful inner children as well, so it's like all four of us get together and our inner children go funny, go wild.
Yeah, it's amazing. For any listeners that want to experience this, Beck interviews her family all the time, ask them crazy questions and interrupting everything. It's amazing. So let's quickly jump to, so you jumped into a relationship, right? So you experienced all this bullying. You kind of had this inferior complex by the stage and really not feeling confident. So you mentioned that you went into a relationship with a guy to try and find solace, the nurturing in that. Did you find it or what happened when you tried to find it there?
So the relationship was beautiful, but it ended very, very abruptly and through an act of physical violence. So I temporarily had safety. For 2 years, I was in a relationship. I found validation through being in relationship. He was very, I always call him partners that are very popular because that obviously triggers the core wound of never fitting in. But when the universe, when it was me, you know, avoiding all of my ineffective beliefs that came throughout that high school period, and I believe that we're never free from them until we truly face off with them, and then randomly and through an act of physical violence, that's how my relationship came to an end. I had a big fight one evening. I was in the back of a car with a closed fist. He punched me to my head, knocked me unconscious. I ended up with a bruise down the side of my face. And when I came back to, he was on the outside of the car, yelling at the car, punching the car. And that was really like a, like such a pivotal moment in my life that kind of came out of nowhere.
Hmm. Was he on alcohol, drugs, anything at that stage?
No, I have such a vague recollection. I think maybe some amount of beers, but not to be like, oh my God, he was so drunk. We'd had a series of events that had happened that night where we helped, he and his friends helped a drunk motorcyclist. They rode motorbikes, the boys, and I felt like my safety was really endangered. And the motorcyclist had been drink driving and he didn't want them to call the ambulance and the police. I said, let's call the ambulance and the police just to make sure we can't move him. His back could be broken. He could be, we don't know who this man is. Like, we don't owe him anything. Let's just make sure he's okay. He's looked after. And whatever consequences come from drink driving, consequences come from drink driving. Let's just make sure his back's okay. But with the brotherhood that they had around men on motorbikes, they helped him. And I really felt like my safety was threatened by him doing that and I felt like I got put in harm's way to help this stranger. So I was probably having a go at him for not making me a priority and not making my safety a priority. And we were bickering, but yeah, ended with a closed fist. And that was a very big, moment in time in my life.
Were you able to realize the magnification, like the pivotal moment that was happening there, like as a universal message, or did you just feel again threatened, back into the bullying little girl that experienced that?
Oh, straight back. I had no idea. I had no idea how all of these events tied in. It's just straight back into, where will I fit in the world? Who will love me? Who will accept me? Where will I feel safe? Women emotionally harm me, which ends up in almost physical pain, threatens my life. Men now, like big generalization, but now I feel unsafe with men. The only place that I do feel safe is in my family unit. Where will I find a sense of safety and belonging? And I felt really empty, very lost, very lonely. I've always been very proud. I found it very shameful to be assaulted with a closed fist and knocked unconscious. I also, the truth of me was I wanted my boyfriend back and wanted my boyfriend to talk to me, and he wouldn't. So that made me feel even more shameful. I'm like, I'm trying to call him. He's not answering his phone. He experienced a lot of shame and grief over what had happened. And so there was no communication. It was a very abrupt breakup. It was a first love, a first almost everything. So, you know, it was a lot of emotions for a young 19-year-old. And for me, I just felt like, what now? Like, I literally don't fit in anywhere in this world.
So did the relationship end with the punch?
Straight away. That was it.
Okay, done.
I think we'd had the only thing that he spoke to me about, which added even more shame to it, we'd booked a trip to Fiji and we'd put down a deposit and he wouldn't talk to me, and then he finally spoke to me to get his money back for his deposit. And that's what made me feel like, you've punched me in my head, not even apologized or checked in to see if I'm okay, and all you care about is getting a refund.
So this is massive. This is so prevalent in for females all around the world, and it's I believe it's the reason why so many females don't feel safe. A lot of men are unable to actually even connect with that fact. You know, like I come from South Africa, which is not a safe country at all. It's ridiculously unsafe. So I kind of understand to that degree, you know, like Claire has never been able to go hiking on her own and like in beautiful nature and all that. So I understand where you're coming from. So for the people out there that perhaps don't come from South Africa, or they do, or they're out in the world and they have been hit by their partner, or they have suffered like physical abuse, in your amazing hindsight, because you've done a lot of the work, which we'll cover later, what can you suggest to someone for the next step to be? Because did you share with someone? Did you invite someone into this episode? What happened?
Oh, I mean, the friends knew. I think a friend was driving the car and the friend's girlfriend was in the car at the same time. So they obviously knew. But we're 19. I think the emotional capacity to deal with that at that time, when my parents saw my head, they asked me what happened. And I said that I just bumped. I opened the car door and hit my head as I was getting out. But obviously Joel never called, never came round again, never came to family dinner again. So they knew that something unfolded, and that for me there was a lot of shame there to turn around and say, this is what happened to me. So I think the first step with anything, you know, shame has, again, played a role in my life going forward if we were to skip through some other years. But the one thing that I know about shame is the more that we hold it inside, the more that it festers and brews and gets bigger, and we create bigger stories around what this shameful thing means about us. And then after a period of time, we'll start believing it. The greatest thing that we can do is speak it, give it a voice so that it's no longer hidden, share it with someone who you feel safe with. And then from there, if you need support, I mean, support for me has been the greatest part of my healing journey, finding mentors who have broken through whatever it is that I'm experiencing and can pave the way for me to and through my breakthrough. That sharing it is the only way out.
Yeah, I think it's so important. It's something that I've always carried from what Tony Robbins has always said, and that is, whether you're suffering in pain or whether you want it to be more successful, find the person that's done the exact work that you are needing to do or wanting to do, and read their books, watch their movies, work with them, whatever the case is, and get an accountability partner. I think it's so important to hold yourself accountable, because what you're demonstrating here is you didn't want to tell anyone because of the shame. So the walls you were using to protect yourself started imprisoning you into this very small micro world, where eventually, I'm guessing, the wheels started coming off. And that's kind of what I want to understand. How did you get from that to this expansive back? Like, how did it unfold?
So what I recognized in that moment, the thing that was really pivotal for me, was that I actually deeply wanted my boyfriend back, and I wanted him to talk to me, and he wouldn't. And I felt so weak, and I've always had such a value for being strong. And I thought to myself, if women try to harm me and men try to harm me, what could I do that would make me feel strong? And so the only thing that I could think of was physical fitness. I thought, if I go to the gym and work on my body, maybe I'll look strong and then people won't try and hurt me. I didn't think anything about my exterior image. I didn't think about aesthetics. I didn't think about looking good. I just thought, strong. If I'm strong, people will not hurt me. I will be safe. So I went to the gym, got a diet plan, exercise program from a personal trainer and started doing my thing. And next minute, my body just started changing rapidly. I'm very like hyper person. Once I'm in on something, I'm all in.
Yeah.
Well, I was like counting my almonds and weighing my broccoli and my chicken and doing exactly what she said. And all of a sudden, my body just changed. And I went from a normal girl to a fitness model in about 2.5 months. And I was training in a very busy gym in Perth, Western Australia, where there was like men training for Gladiator, women training for TV shows, sports models, and all of these what looked like very cool people. And I lived in a world where I was never cool. And all of a sudden, these very, in my perception, cool people were being so nice to me. Mm. People were acknowledging me, saying hello to me. Men were asking me on dates. Facebook was new. Everyone was adding me as a friend. I was being invited to places. And so all of a sudden, this thing that I never was, just for the way that I am, I was now the opposite. I was now cool, liked, popular, wanted, desired. And so all of a sudden, I resonated being attractive, having a beautiful body, being on a diet, with being liked, loved, accepted, and that meant safe. I didn't realize it meant safe at the time. So I had this this addiction to external validation. I didn't realize I was avoiding being rejected in school. I didn't realize I was avoiding the shame of being assaulted by my boyfriend. Now I just threw myself fully into avoidance and trying to find safety in physical appearance and external validation.
Wow, that's huge.
That was my next step.
That's huge. And how did that unfold for you? Because a lot of people do take the step into physical fitness and then they start manifesting into kind of whether it's eating disorders or just keeping that status of being that person that people are inviting on Facebook and asking on dates and all of that. But meanwhile, you've got this body that's changed, but inside you're still craving something outside of you.
So I set a goal for a bikini modeling and bodybuilding competition. And the day, and I didn't realize, I thought I would diet for this thing and the day would come and I would have all the validation and all, and I felt like I would have acceptance of the past. Like the day would come and a feeling would arrive. And I train, ate, and did all the perfect things to have this perfect body, and the day came and there was no feeling. There was no peace, love, acceptance, forgiveness. There was nothing. Just this feeling of emptiness that I'd worked so hard to try and create a feeling of something within me that I wasn't feeling. The day was here and I felt even more lost and even more empty. And then after being so restrictive in terms of dieting for 8 months, then eating started. So I, like you said, disordered eating. I suffered with body dysmorphia, bulimia for the better part of 10 years. And so it was kind of riding the highs and lows of every time I was in great physical shape, I was back on that being liked, loved, accepted bandwagon. Every time I came off it, the low got even deeper and even lower and even more heavy to get out of. And the binge eating became even bigger and the shame spiral would grow even more massive and the dark hole would just that consume me for the better part of almost 10 years.
And at this time, were you dating anyone? Were you like starting new relationships or?
So I think I was in and out of two relationships, but nothing really major. And then I had my one other pivotal partner in my life. And he was the person that really tried to support me to turn my body image around, where, he tried to help me through first ultimatums, like if you don't stop doing what you're doing to yourself and your body, I'll leave you. And then we just tried to navigate being healthy but not obsessed around health together, and trying to really attach to the things that brought our relationship joy outside of food and outside of our body. Mm. But it's been, even outside of that relationship, it's been a real process.
Yeah, I can imagine. I think Claire has got an eating disorder and she's in recovery from it in her own right. And I'm going to ask a question for the people that have or with people or have loved ones that are suffering from disordered eating, eating disorders, whatever the case is, vulnerability, just like the place you're at. What kind of support were you wanting? Or should I say, from this point, what kind of support did you need from a loved one?
You know, it's so hard because at the time, again, so much shame around what I was doing. I didn't want to tell people. I found it so embarrassing to be, I found binge eating embarrassing. I was like, this, I'm just a disgusting human who, of course, the thoughts from when I was bullied, you're disgusting. I'm like, I'm a disgusting human. Yeah. I can't control myself. And then I would throw up the food or abuse laxatives. Again, I'm a disgusting human. And because there was so much shame there, I didn't want to admit it. So you could see it on my body, but there was no admittance because there was just so much shame. What did I want? I think I wanted someone to say, no matter what it is that you're experiencing, it's safe to share. And I hope that you know that you're not the only one who experiences these things. I don't want you to feel alone in your experience. And I would love to help you, whatever you're going through, to be able to be witnessed without judgment. Without being told I need to be fixed can sometimes be the most powerful thing for people.
I think that's huge. A lot of people are trying to point fingers and tell a lot of people what to do, instead of just be there with them. Just like that emotional comfort that I'm here for when you need me. And I think it's difficult, especially as a coach in a relationship. A lot of times the first thing that I want to activate is like, hey, let me coach you. Let me push you into your edges. And we've kind of put up a boundary now between Claire and I, you know, like, and it happened this morning, you know, she was battling with something. She asked me and I was there for support. And she's like, no, can you help me as a coach now? Like, can you give me advice? I'm like, okay. So asking for permission. And I know you probably didn't have the resolve to do this during this decade, or should I say probably over a decade.
Well, this is before I was 25. I mean, yeah. And to be honest, I really closed the lid on my disordered eating with Preston Smiles when I was 30, 31.
Like, amazing.
Even though physically it wasn't there, the thoughts were still in my, I had control over the ineffective habits, but the thoughts were still consuming me.
Drink a boom?
No, long before Kaboom in Stretch 22.
Ah, amazing.
Okay. So about 2 years before Kaboom, I went to Preston for, I'm sure we'll get to my STI at some stage, but I went to, when all of that was going on for me and I went to him for the breakthrough around body image, I said to him, even though it doesn't, I don't look like I have a problem because I look like a healthy person, but if this was drugs or alcohol, people might understand because drugs and alcohol addiction is bad, my all consuming thoughts and feelings about food in my body at the time, they were eating me alive. And sometimes you can't see it. And I just want presence as well. When I'm triggered, those thoughts around body image are still there. Like they can still rise to the surface. Doesn't mean I take action on them. It's just my default. And even now, like I'm really empowered in my fitness at the moment. My boyfriend checked in, not from a coaching place, but just, and not to give me advice, but he was like, I noticed you're really into it at the moment. And I just want to make sure, is everything okay? This isn't some kind of disordered eating thing that's popping up or an obsessive fitness thing that's popping up. I just want to check in. Is this coming from an embodied place and because you're loving what you're doing, or is this an unhealthy pattern? Just let me know. Do I need to be concerned here? So
I do the same thing. It's like, hey, I can see you working out quite a bit. So how does that make you feel? Do you feel like vulnerable and still wanting to hide, or are you like quite comfortable now saying, hey?
Oh no, I mean, I've had one big body image thing in say the past 18 months, and I like broke down to Jake and I shared it all, and it was so important. I know now, well, I'm like a child now, I believe that anything that's inside of me that's ineffective, I just like let it out, because I know if I hold it in, it'll fester and brew and get bigger. So I give so much permission to the expression of whatever's inside me, no matter if, because if I let it in, hold it inside, there'll be judgment and shame. I know compassion and expression is the antidote. So I'm just like, Jake, this is what it is, and I need to express this, and he holds space for it. And there's, yeah, for me, it's the expressions, the breakthrough. But in a conscious relationship, there's always a, do you want my feedback? Do you want my support? Am I just here to listen? And I feel like that's one of the most healing aspects of it.
100%. So you mentioned Preston Smiles helped you. And for listeners that don't know Preston Smiles, it's a mutual mentor of both Beck and myself, an amazing man, amazing family man. Like, I'll put the link in the show notes. But what was this pivotal moment that he allowed you to be aware of? Because I know he's just the mirror. He's the mirror. He's the vessel of universal energy. So what was it about that you came to the realization that, hey, this is what happened?
So I was, at the time, I was facing off with all the shame around my STI. I'd gone to Preston specifically for that. I was consumed around like my journey, like the pivotal moment of all of my change was the manifestation of the herpes virus. And that was why I came onto Preston's path. And while I was consumed by that, I kind of forgot about the disordered eating to a point. And when I was in this program with Preston, literally there to be able to face off with my fear around claiming that I test positive for the virus. And I'd been on such a healing journey of plant medicines, ayahuasca, mushrooms, sananga, camo, anything with natural healing properties, so that I could never claim publicly that I test positive for the herpes virus. Well, I went to the doctor one day and I came back with a false negative, telling me that I no longer tested positive for the virus, which is all I wanted. I'd gone for 2 years traveling Australia, doing all of these different plant medicines and then doing a blood test, doing plant medicines, doing a blood test, because I was certain I'm the person that's so healthy that I can find a way to heal this thing naturally.
And was this from a past relationship or just...
The STI?
Yeah, the herpes, yeah.
This is from the relationship that was trying to help me with my disordered eating. We didn't. We had very different values sexually and different desires sexually, and I really felt I had a lot of unmet needs in that relationship. I broke up with him twice out of integrity. We kept getting back together and I just kept feeling unseen, unloved, undesired, unwanted. And at the time I had my little fitspo body. I was getting a lot of attention from men and I eventually ended up cheating. I broke up with him the day after I cheated. So it's not like a cheat and repeat thing. Not that I judge anyone for whatever they do, but mine was like cheat and break up because that was like the thing that I thought that I would never do. The man that I cheated on him with was the man that gave me the virus.
Okay.
And he promised me he was STI free. So that was kind of feeling like my entire life I had worked to try and not be what the girls used to scream at me in school. Like I'd be on the treadmill and be like, I cannot be disgusting. I cannot be rank. And then all of a sudden the doctor's telling me that I test positive for the most stigmatized virus in society that's labeled as disgusting and rank.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the awakening of me trying to be something for other people is never going to create happiness within myself. Me thinking that my looks is the thing that makes me lovable. Well, now they just, that I thought they'd been ripped from me. And so I got propelled into a self-discovery journey of truly finding tools to love myself for who I am from within, for all my light and for my shadow and for my herpes virus.
Wow, that's huge. It's it's interesting to witness that what we focus on, whether it's trying to let go of it or bring into our life, but if essentially what we focus on is what we become. And I know a lot of like, if people listen to like Abraham Hicks or in any type of like abundance kind of work with coaches, mentors, teachers, and that they'll tell you that when you focus on something so hard and so diligently, it's eventually going to manifest in your life some way, in some shape or form. So what did Preston drop
in? My belief is the avoidance of emotional pain will only further create manifest pain in our physical reality. Mm. Like even when I was 22, I went overseas for a breast enhancement surgery. I came back with the horror of all horror breast surgeries.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And when people are like, it's good because you went overseas. I'm like, no, it's not. My sister went overseas and she's got beautiful breasts. I went overseas and my thoughts manifested a horror drip. Yeah. Like the universe was just like, wake up, wake up, wake up. You're avoiding these, the subconscious, like constantly in the back of my mind for 10 years. I didn't realize I'm disgusting. I'm rank. I'll never be accepted. Women hate me. Men will do that, will hurt and harm me. And that's what I was avoiding.
Yeah. That's what you're creating. Building up your own mantra in the back of your head. And of course, that's what's going to manifest. The universe is powerful. So the last signal for you came in the version of a beautiful chocolate-looking man called Preston Smiles, and he dropped in a little bit of the awareness of, and what was that exact awareness? Because I know Stretch 22, but what he would have done something or action something, or I don't know what he did.
So I went to the doctor and I came back with a false negative, and I was like, Preston, the doctor told me that I don't have herpes. He was like, awesome, like celebrating you, amazing, you healed it. And then all of a sudden, when that was out of my mind, all of my body image stuff came screaming to the surface. And I was like, I am consumed with my body image now, like absolutely obsessing. And he was like, talk about it. Don't let it have power over you anymore. So because I was trying to get him to understand, I was like, it's like drugs and alcohol and you don't understand because I look healthy. He was like, stop trying to pretend like you've got all your fucking shit together and act like this thing doesn't have power over you and speak about it. And he gave me a 30-day challenge to speak about the extent of my body image and how much control it has over me and how much it consumes pretty much every single action that I take in the day. And that's what started my journey. I just started speaking about it.
Released the power.
Yeah, I released the power.
So beautiful. So now you're still Are you still, you don't have herpes anymore? Like, you healed from that?
Oh, no. I do test positive for the herpes virus. I mean, I'm a very pro natural health person. So I manage my health naturally through natural remedies, food, high quality drinking water. I don't show symptoms for the virus, but if I was to go into a blood test, it would say that I test positive for the antibody.
Because it is one of the STIs that you cannot really get rid of. Well, right now, the current narrative is that, yeah.
I believe that I'm sure there is some beautiful natural healing something in the Amazon.
100%.
Somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I love the
part. Not one that I've found yet, though.
Okay, you'll find it. You'll find it's coming. Maybe after this podcast. So you've met a beautiful man now. And I want to get into that. So you're coming with a stigmatized STI now, right? You're coming with a lot of baggage that you're able to carry now and actually talk about and show your truth. Because I think what you are personified as is a truth sayer. Like, the amount of truth that comes out of you, no matter what other people think, is huge according to how you grew up. So you've got this aspect of you. You're feisty. You are... You show up, and it's a beautiful way, you know, and you show up with a smile on your face every time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How do you manage, or how did you get into a relationship consciously with divulging everything? Like, hey, you know, I've got this SDI, this is what happened to me. How did he receive that, and how did you manage that?
So I had done so much work around myself, my standards in relationship, what kind of man that I was holding space for, what kind of powerful partnership. I was really not, like, I wasn't going to settle for anything less than a powerful partnership. I was single for 7 years. And I'd done lots of press and stuff around this as well. I mean, we learned standards in Stretch 22, and standards changed my life. He also gave, I'm not sure if you've heard him.
What is standards?
Standards is, like, I speak about what emotionally, like, from my feminine energy, it would feel like to be in the most loving, expansive relationship with a man. So I described that 2 years ago, and then I had three A3 sheets of, like, logical standards. For example, he celebrates all of me. He comes to family dinner once a week and enjoys time there. He doesn't bring mobile phone and social media into the bed. Like, these are some logical standards. And you can have dream standards, fantasy standards, and then you can just have your non-negotiable standards. Like, I need, for me, like, loyalty. Monogamy, they're two non-negotiable standards for me. Wanting to get married and have children, non-negotiable standards for me. And I feel when we get really super crystal clear on our standards, the universe will start sending whatever it is. Your distinction might be money. I've done this around all different areas of my life, fitness, food. Once you start declaring what your standards are, the universe will send you back reflections of almost quite, but not just that. And you get to choose. I got to choose. Am I going to settle? Like, I called in before Jake, the most gorgeous man, who valued polyamory. And even though I don't judge it, it's just not a value of mine personally and what I want for my life. My little girl just won't feel safe in that space. So it was really confronting to have this list of, like, I think I had 47 things on it. He was all of it except wanted an open relationship.
Yeah.
And I really got to sit down with myself and be like, do I kind of want to settle on all that one really important thing for all the other things? And I was like, no, I can't. That's a non-negotiable for me. That's not a fantasy or a dream. That's a non-negotiable. So that's what standards are.
And when you shortcut your standards, you really are shortcutting your life. And I want everyone to hear that. It might be one out of 47, but that one out of 47 is still you giving up on you. And the possibility is endless. We can all get exactly what we want.
I when I met Jake, I think it said on there he earns like $250,000 Australian that or more a year. That to me is not a non-negotiable. That's like a dream standard, but it also has on there he's working towards his bigger vision. And when I met Jake had a men's mindset coaching business. He's got a successful gym, building two franchises. While he was taking minimal wage for himself, he was pouring so much love into his passion, which to me, like, beyond seeing someone earn great money a year, is them acting on their passion that lights them up. That excites me. So that, like, you have on your standards your non-negotiables, and then you have your fantasy as well. But no, I'd done so much work around calling in this relationship through powerful practices that Preston had supported me in as well, including sending signs to the universe. Like 6 months prior to meeting Jake properly, I went up to attractive men on the street and I would walk up to them and be like, hey, my name's Beck and I just want to let you know I really love your eyes. And then I'd walk away. So I was kind of in the practice of saying to the universe, like, I'm here for it, I'm here for it, I'm here for it. But when I met Jake, we'd known each other for 4 years. I met him through he was actually a potential business partner for an old business that I was a marketing manager before. He walked into the office and something about his energy that really excited me. And then we'd been following each other. He's in the same space. So we'd been following each other on social media for a long time. So I knew what he spoke about. He knew what I spoke about. So when we actually finally officially met, he already knew all the stuff about herpes. He already knew how open I am on the internet. Mm-hmm. He was very aware of the entire package that is Beck Antonucci. So it wasn't like, oh my God, this big shock surprise of I'm Beck and I just want to let you know I test positive, even though I've gone through that experience with other amazing men too. But Jake being in the internet world as well as myself, he was already aware of everything that comes with who I am.
Were you still nervous to get into the subject that you've got an STI?
You know what? Actually, yes, because we didn't talk about it, which was because he knew me from the internet. And prior to that, I was always about meeting people. I love organically meeting someone, sitting down with them, having a conversation, not letting them stalk my social media and make a decision about who I am as a person based on Instagram. But I really valued human to human connection. So Jake was the first person I dated who knew me from the internet. So because he'd commented on all my stuff, we just didn't have that conversation.
Yeah.
And so we started having sex and I was turning to my best friend. And I was like, there's like a disconnect. She's like, well, have you had the conversation around herpes? And I was like, he already knows. Like he's commented on all my stuff. She's like, but have you had a conversation with him about it? I was like, no, we just didn't do that. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was like maybe 6 weeks in that or 8 weeks. And I was like, I really like you as a person, but there's some like compatibility stuff going on for me personally when it comes to sex. I'm sure you're experiencing it too. And so we spoke about all the ins and outs of that. And I was like, and we haven't had a conversation around me testing positive for the herpes virus. Hmm. So then we had that conversation there as well.
That's amazing. Let's break the stigma on herpes virus, right? For people that are wanting to date, because I know it's so prevalent. So many people have it. Herpes, STIs, whatever the case is. I know when I was playing the field, I was always petrified taking STI tests and STD tests every single week.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thank my lucky stars. I don't know how I never came across an STI or STD, but the universe still had my fucking back.
You know, my two housemates, they've been players. And they're like, how did you end up with one and we never have?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm like, manifestation, that's how.
I actually had a friend that I bumped into again for like 2 or 3 years ago. And he said to me, you know what? The fucking other day, I got an STD or STI. I don't know which one it was. He's like, I got an STI and all that went through my mind was, how the fuck did you not? And I was like, oh, bro, I'm sorry. I was manifesting correctly. But let's break that stigma.
And they just get to be just such a normal, natural part of the human experience.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean, that's the beautiful thing, right? It's not, there's no wrong or right. That's what I always say. There's just like, there just is reality. And like, mm-hmm. this is kind of your reality. And it's just like it's a character trait of yours now, but people are still scared of it. You know, like a lot of guys and even me, like I would not know how to manage it. If I met like, say, well, I have met the girl of my dreams, but if I had to like, say I hadn't, and I was going to meet the girl of my dreams. And even though I knew she had herpes, I wouldn't know how to approach it sexually and even from a conversation point of view. So like, mm-hmm. how can you guide people out there to have this conversation and even jump into bed and have sex?
Yeah, I mean, I think as for anything, whether it's STIs or just any single thing that you're experiencing in relationship, really honest conversation. I mean, I had a woman ask me yesterday, I've just met a man. He's just disclosed to me that he tests positive for the herpes virus. He's directed me to your page. I'm really interested in him. I don't know how I'm feeling and all those beautiful things. And so she shared so much with me. And I said to her, you get to share your honest thoughts, because I can understand if I didn't test positive for the virus and I was sitting in front of someone who did, I wouldn't want to offend them. But then also I would have all of these thoughts and fears like, What if I date you for a month and then you give it to me and then you high and dry me? What if we're together for 3 years, I end up with it and then we break up and then what? I'm left with a stigmatized virus. What if there would be so many what ifs for me? I think the most beautiful thing that you can do is literally share every single thing that's coming up for you. Like, for example, for myself, I don't get symptoms, which is I have a high value for health. Other people get quite frequent symptoms. So some men have come into my space and like, what if I choose this woman? And yeah, I'm okay if I'm on the receiving end of the virus and I'm like you and I never get symptoms. What if I'm one of those unfortunate ones and I get them every 2 weeks for the rest of my life? Like, these are all very common fears. And the only way to navigate them is to literally have a conversation about it. And for me, it would require me to have so much trust in that person to see how they navigate my fears. If you don't have me in them, then maybe the risk isn't worth the reward. If you haven't got me while I'm saying, okay, I do choose you, and I'm obviously there's a health concern there for me, and I'd love to discuss all the ins and outs of it because I don't know about it. I mean, I didn't know about STIs until I had to learn about one in real time. So that's quite the case for a lot of people. If I was to sit there in front of a man who was like, I test positive for the herpes virus, I'm like, I really like you, but these are my fears. And he's like, well, deal with it. But well, you haven't made me feel safe in this engagement.
Yeah.
So I think really just such honest conversation. And when I reflect back, if I'd have been STI free and I got to choose again, there's three men in particular that I was so curious about that I still would have gone there. I think I would have gone there with condoms, even though they're not 100% safe proof because it is a skin-to-skin contact virus and you don't need symptoms to transmit. That's the reason why it's so rampant in society. I mean, HSV-1, which is cold sores on your lips, is the herpes virus. So people who actually get cold sores on their lips, people don't realize that they can and have the potential to transmit when you're giving oral sex, even when you don't have an outbreak. And that's why it's such a rampant, I don't call it a disease, I call it a skin infection. I feel like the D part, the disease part, is really disease mongering and fear mongering. It's just a skin infection, completely manageable, and the only way to really feel safe in relationship, no matter what it is that you're experiencing, financial struggle, problems with family, is such raw, honest conversation, and don't hold anything inside and see if you two can navigate it together.
And I think that's such a great parallel to the entire piece of living life. And it's about if we can really just show up vulnerably, show up for what we believe in, show up for our truth. If it comes from a place of like teaching, if it comes from a place of sharing who you are more versus coming from a place of like ego and trying to be better than your neighbor, you can only grow. And sometimes growing is not easy. Sometimes growing is not fun. It's like, fuck, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've dealt with my herpes stuff ages ago, but I mean, I'm in relationship now that's brought its whole new set of overwhelming, interesting thoughts, fears, insecurities. And sometimes I'll turn to Jake and I'll be like, but what if this? And he's like, Beck, anything that we could experience as a partnership, other people have experienced. And no matter what roadblock, hurdle we ever face off with in our life, if we can't navigate it together, we'll make sure that we go and get support so that we can break through it with each other. Like, we'll still be side by side. There's always going to be hurdles and things that come and obstacles that come on our path. For me, it's no longer the herpes virus because I've been there and dealt with that. For me, it's showing up, you know, I lived in avoidance around relationship and fear of getting hurt. My attachment style is avoidant. So now my greatest work is leaning in when my head says run. But you know, it's still the same, still navigating the same thing, having a really honest conversation, leaning in when the fear is there rather than running, getting support if support is what's required to break through. You know, it's the same as navigating having a partner with an eating disorder.
Yeah.
It just requires safety and conversation.
Holding a safe space. That's exactly what I found. It's like sometimes I think we're humans are inevitably born, from the moment we're born, we're always trying to fix things. Like, we're very tactile. We, you know, like our ancestors built their own homes. Like, nowadays we just pay a builder or contractor, but like, we're always trying to build things or fix things or wanting things to be seemingly perfect, in inverted commas, for all the listeners. And it's just not like that. You know, it's about creating that sacred circle. You know, it's creating that place where we can come home. Not necessarily to a house, but like, we can come home to someone, whether that's in the back of a car, or whether that's in a busy restaurant or a busy club or whatever the case is. And I think the message that you share, and it's really, I learn from you every day, because there's not many people, I think, in the world that I've been able to witness that shares their truth from a place of plain and simple, it's their truth, and with a smile on their face. I find a lot of people in this world are trying to mimic that, but you can very much see it's coming from a place of ego and wanting to be better or wanting to be other to the other. Mm-hmm. And how do you keep showing up like that no matter what?
I think having, and thank you, that's such a beautiful thing to hear about myself, but I think having Preston in my corner has always helped. Preston is like my medicine and just activates me. Like whatever he says, it just penetrates my heart and I'm like, I'm ready to go. I'm like, this is not about me. My journey has happened in such a way that it would be doing such a disservice for me to stay in my head and make it about me and keep me small. And I think permission to just share my voice and be expressed, because I really feel like that's what we were all put on the planet to do and how we're all meant to be. We all have our own unique medicine that we're here to give and gift the world. I think mine is my voice. I think I was given a strong voice for a reason. And sometimes my ego can get attached to me being there as if there even exists, without the permission to be in the awkward phase and the beginner and the person who delivers a message awkwardly or in her ego and all of the things. And I know that the only way for me to get where I'm going is for me to every day and be in the practice. And the longer I take to take action on that, the further away I am from wherever this imaginary fantasy there even is. So that's why every day I keep leaning in. And I've realized through that unlocking of my voice, it creates such deep healing for so many people. And when I see my journey impact someone else in such a positive way that it creates healing for them, it's like 360. When I started sharing, it wasn't because I was shame-free. It was because I just wanted it out of me. And then through the witnessing of how much permission it gave others, that's where I kept doing the work to rid myself, free myself from the shame. And the more I see other women unlock and express, the more I'm like, I can't stop now. How could I stop? then what would I do?
Yeah, it's when the mission becomes way bigger than yourself. And that's so beautiful. If you can leave listeners with one piece of advice, activations that you have practiced in order to become a better person, optimize your life, and that, I don't know, I'm going to throw this in as well, because I normally ask this, but I'm going to throw this in as well, that is deemed controversial or deemed not okay to do in society.
Oh. Well, the bit of advice I was going to say is, which is not controversial, is just the threat of the entire conversation, which is avoiding emotional pain will only manifest more pain into our reality. So to really sit with the self, like spend some dedicated time to put pen to paper and ask yourself, what have I been avoiding? Like if there's a place in your life that you feel like it could be the bills in the mail. Could be, I remember when I had a really terrible money story where I just wouldn't look at my bank account. I wouldn't open bills. Like what is it that you're avoiding? And whatever you're avoiding, that's pointing to your freedom as well. Because as soon as you look with that awareness, you can create change. You would make choice creates change. But from a controversial standpoint.
I mean, that is pretty controversial.
Is it?
Because for me, controversy is exactly where people don't want to go. And it's what people don't want to talk about.
I'm glad I nailed it then. But like, I was like, I don't think I have anything controversial.
No. Like, I believe in the power of words and the power of actions. And when I look at words and actions, they are very far apart right now in the world we're in. When we look at the political landscape, when we look at everything, whatever it is, from our leaders, trusted leaders, and inverted commas again, because don't know where those fuckers are. But anyway, but in saying that, I love it that you just dropped that message, because I think 90% of people struggle with that. 90% of people struggle with showing up for who they are without feeling left out or different.
Yeah, and I think that's why if you were to put pen to paper and literally ask yourself, what am I avoiding? Because awareness is the first step. And then with that heightened level of awareness, like my life is exactly the way it is, A, because of me, radical responsibility, personal power, taking it back. Then what do I want to do here? Action. So conscious aligned action, awareness plus conscious aligned action, put the two together and now you've got positive change. But to just be in awareness with no action, you're just going to be sitting in your own self-created suffering, and to not even have awareness and just not even look and continuously live in avoidance, self-created suffering. So you can choose self-created suffering, more self-created suffering, or positive effective change that requires a lot of inner courage and willingness to actually look at the self.
That's so powerful. It's been such a powerful conversation.
It's been so cool.
I've always loved connecting with you. It's amazing. Even like when we're going the leap, and I always knew when we, so Beck and I were in a group called, one of Preston's groups called The Leap. And let me tell you, it was quite a leap, quite a quantum leap. And every time we'd show up, I think there were 30 of us, and we had some activation that was really putting us in our shadows. Like, I always knew the first person that's going to show up and share their truth was Beck. I'm like, okay, my level that I need to meet is like just showing up in the same amount of truth as Beck. I'm like, okay, next time, next week, I'm coming up and showing up before it. But anyway, I've learned so much from you, and thank you so much. I know our listeners have definitely learned so much as well. And I know a lot of people will probably resonate with your story, whether it's from an eating disorder or whether it's from herpes or whether it's just from physical abuse, whatever that is, your story is complex. How can people best reach you?
Instagram's probably the quickest way to get the quickest response. So over at Beck Antonucci, send me a message or just come for a follow, and everyone's very welcome there.
Awesome. Link is in the bio, and in the show notes. Go get it. Go follow this powerhouse superwoman. I'm so excited. Thank you.